You're listening to Renegade Broadcasting. August, what do you know? Here we are, essentially the last 4 weeks of summer, really. I mean, I don't really count September. I was just saying, you know, you sneeze a couple times, blow your nose, and summer's gone. Well, it's well on its way to gone, and yet winter lasts for friggin' ever. Anyway, before we get into our discussion, just a few things I got to comment on here. Well, we had a little respite, didn't we, of at least a few months or so without any fake shootings. And now all of a sudden, we got busy tied up with other shenanigans, and we got to remember about the shooting thing, because that's one of our important agendas, and we got to get that thing going here. So what do we get? Two shootings, all within 12 hours of each other. And, of course, they both have the same classic bullshit MOs of, no blood, just hearsay, just claims of, I think one had, 20 casualties, the other one, 19. Ooh, they're getting real creative with their numbers now. And, of course, 20 somewhat casualties with both of them. The first one, of course, was in Texas, and the guy's name was Crucius. Right away, I saw red flags with that one. Just that name alone. Have you ever even heard of a friggin' last name, Crucius? That's a psyops name. I'm sorry. I'm not buying that shit. Crucius. You know, it has the connotation of like, well, first of all, it sounds like some Roman, doesn't it? Some Roman conqueror, fearful sounding. But it also has the connotation of the Latin word for crucifixion. Crucifixion of our rights, perhaps? Crucius, guys. It's a total psyops. They had to point out that the shooter was white. They actually said that, white. And, you know, that it's a hate crime. They also pointed out that the shopping area where the shooting took place is only 5 miles from the main border checkpoint with Ciudad Juarez, Mexico. So it's like they're trying to make a connection now between this shooting and anti-immigration fanatics. You know, so if you're against immigration now, you must be crazy like that shooter. So they're going to get as much mileage out of this as they can. You know, anti-white propaganda, anti-border, weak border, non-secured border propaganda, you know, blah, 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 blah. Well, they must have caught themselves and realized, oh, shit, wait a minute. We can't have all these shootings be evil white people. We got to have a little variety here because it's getting too obvious. People are catching on to that. So what do we have 12 hours later? Oh, now we have a black man in Ohio. All of a sudden now, I don't even know that any of the shootings ever have been supposedly orchestrated by a black guy. But now they got to throw that one in there, not only so it doesn't look so obvious with the anti-white thing, but hey, maybe this will help with our failing attempt to revive the old animosity between whites and blacks. So yeah, let's throw a black guy in there as the perpetrator. Now, over in Dayton, Ohio, or I guess this one said 9, although I don't know if the number has jumped since then. I said 19, but no, I guess it was 9 killed, 27 injured. Yeah, whatever, blah, blah, blah. They'll change that later, I'm sure, if they haven't already. They always play with the numbers. Oh, I guess that's not enough of the shock effect. Let's say it was 90. Yeah, well, that was 0 at the end of the 9. They just make it up, guys, as they go along. The initial story is made up to begin with, but as they go along, they just, you know, hype it up a little more. This is very significant, should make your hair stand on end. Trump said in regards to these two shootings that he will back up the federal government in whatever way that they decide to handle this. Oh, really now? He's going to back up in whatever way they decide. Well, we know what way they're going to decide, don't we? So he's going to back it up now. Ordinarily, I wouldn't do this, but, you know, we've had 2 now in the past 12 hours. This is serious. It's obvious that this is on the uprise here. And so whatever drastic measures, isn't it obvious what those measures are going to be? And this son of a bitch is going to back it up. And you know that all the Trump ass lickers are going to rally behind him, aren't they? Of course they are. Even ones who formerly were supportive of the Second Amendment, suddenly now because their hero is chiming in. Ah, Christ. Anyway, I think we got Brian on the line. Is that you, Brian?
Yes, it is, Charlie.
Hey, what's happening, man?
Well, first of all, the shooter in El Paso, his name is Patrick Crucius.
Yeah.
And it was discovered shortly after they tried the white supremacy thing that they get that this Patrick guy is actually Jewish.
Oh,
his father, father is a therapist, is a licensed therapist, and very much Jewish. That makes him Jewish.
Now, so that is the real name, Crucius?
Yep, Patrick Crucius.
Really?
Well, that's what they. This is the poor fool that they marked to take the fall for the El Paso.
Well, yeah, yeah.
But meanwhile, all the witnesses hanging around the Walmart that day are basically calling the police liars because they said there was 3 or 4 gunmen in black hoods that came in and started firing away.
Yeah, it
was an organized hit by either CIA, FBI, or of course this one
broadcast I'm watching. Right, you can tell this bimbo was just reading off a script, but she kept elaborating. Yes, in a Walmart. You know, just imagine there's people there that. We're just coming to do some shopping, you know, pick up a few items and not expecting anything like this. Like she even has to say that, like people can't, you know, she's doing that to hype it up and to instill more fear that, oh yeah, my God, I could have been there. That could have been the Walmart I shopped at the other day. Just to hype up to prep you so you'll go along with whatever bullshit the government comes up with to take your rights away. Well, but I could have been there, and so something needs to be done. Just the way she was going on and on, it's like, shut up, lady, will you?
Yeah, well, it gets better. Supposedly, the shooting in El Paso in the Walmart took place over 20 minutes. Okay, what were the people in Walmart doing in that 20 minutes, the moment they heard the first gunfire? Supposedly, the majority of them...
Only 20 minutes? It wasn't an hour and a half or 2 hours,
well,
like Columbine?
Well, a mass shooting like
this...
No, I
know what you're saying, though. That's more time than what it should take for...
Absolutely. It should be over within just a few minutes. But supposedly, the reports say that the majority of them were congregated in the paper aisle. I'm thinking, what were you doing? Attention, Walmart shoppers. We all want you to congregate in the paper aisle so the gunman can easily find you and gun you all down. I'll tell you something, Charlie. If I was in a Walmart store anywhere, also I heard gunfire going on, I'd be beelining for the first exit. Doesn't matter if it's an emergency exit or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Or I'd be
that
hiding.
Sounds like the message in the South Tower. Everybody stay calm and remain in your offices. Everything's fine.
Yep. But think about it. I mean, this guy's going down the aisles, and what were the people doing? Standing there saying, "Hello, gunman, hit me, boom, hit me, boom."
Right.
Like, you know, and it, and I'm serious. You're standing in a Walmart, even if you're not armed. And I always thought that Texas is a concealed weapon carry state. So you mean to tell me this? Everybody was in there and nobody had a gun? You know, I'm serious, Charlie. It, like, you know, don't they allow guns in Texas? Like, where the hell is security?
Yeah, exactly. Open, unconcealed weapons.
Open carry in Texas, exactly. Yeah. First thing you do is you find a bystander's got a gun, boom, boom, blow the guy away. But here's the other thing, even if you don't have a gun, you're in a Walmart. All the shelves are stocked with every conceivable item. Pick up a goddamn can and throw it at the bastard.
Right, you know, right.
Come on. Like, you, it is so ludicrous. And seriously, what were the security and the police doing for 20 minutes? Going out and having donuts and coffee?
Unbelievable.
Like, you don't think about it, Charlie.
Bullshit.
And a Walmart has what, 6 or 7 exits, including fire exits? Boom. I'd be heading for the
making
first
a beeline. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And where are the security camera footages for this one? A Walmart has 30 cameras, right? One camera down every aisle. So
the paper aisle. We're giving away free chips and crackers and a cheese dip. Meet us in the paper aisle.
Yeah. Well, that's what I meant. But the thing is, though, Walmart is loaded with security cameras. So where is all the security camera footage? And where are they going to send out for the security camera footage? Are they going to claim that all 30 cameras were offline miraculously all at the same time and the gunmen?
They must have been too busy watching Joe Billy Bob steal a Snickers bar or something.
Yeah, whatever, yeah. But the thing is, so what really bugs me about this too is they keep on saying that this guy came in and from the footage of Crisius, he didn't carry any more than one clip. Okay, an average clip for the gun he was carrying, even if it's an AK-47 or even an AR-15, would carry a maximum of about 30 rounds in one clip. And yet they say that with that one clip of 30 rounds, he was able to kill 20 people and wound 40 more. So explain to me how you can
shoot.
They were
all standing in line, and he shot a bullet through all of them at once. That's it.
Yeah, almost like the magical bullet that hit what's his name, the governor of Texas back in 63, and miraculously took a 180 spin in that and came back in and hit
ping, 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 and then a double 90-degree dive. Get the, in midair.
But it gets better. Where was the EMT response? Supposedly, there was only one ambulance that actually went to the Walmart. One ambulance.
Yeah.
Several other paramedic vehicles, but only one ambulance. They blew it big time with this one, Charlie. They got so sloppy. So what are they doing? All the victims load, stack the bodies and victims into one ambulance.
Oh man. Business as usual. Nothing has changed. But there's Trump not questioning the official bullshit because he knows it's bullshit. Of course he does.
No, because he's probably behind it too. Because it gets
better. Of course he is.
The alleged shooter,
the dumbass Trump supporters. How can you not see that this guy is in on this and now he's pledging to back up whatever the federal government wants to do, as if he would do otherwise anyway.
Yeah. But it gets even better. The reaction, like, you know, this guy wrote a manifesto. I have it up at my site at Northern Truth Seeker. Anybody can read the manifesto. It's right there. I put the whole manifesto. This guy's putting a manifesto that he's out to shoot Mexicans and illegals, and yet the 20 people that he supposedly shot in that Walmart were mostly white and American citizens. So if he's going after illegals, what the hell is he doing?
Yeah.
This was a total bullshit to start with.
Yeah, they're going to have to back away on that one.
And then we have that presidential candidate, the Beto O'Rourke character, that goes in front of the camera after, and he's almost chuckling. If you watch the video of him in front of the camera, and he's starting to talk, he starts almost taking almost like a grin, almost like a tongue-in-cheek, and he actually starts laughing.
Unbelievable, man.
So what does that remind you of? Robbie Parker going up in front of the camera?
Yeah. Every one of these friggin' shootings, Brian. Every one of them. You got laughing people with every last freaking one of these shootings.
You're talking about Carver that was laughing while he's turning around and giving the statement as the...
Oh, no, literally every one of them. I've seen it with, you know, the church shooting in South Carolina.
Yep.
the nightclub in Florida. I mean, it just goes on and on. The friggin' the school shooting. What was the one?
And then they started with Crucius, of course. All reports show that he was a registered Democratic voter. And then miraculously, the Jewish spew media changes that to him being a Republican supporter. America, you are so screwed. I'm serious. And the American people swallow that. But it gets better because you were talking about the Dayton shooting. Like the Dayton shooting, they claim was done by a white guy by the name
of a black guy.
No, it was a white guy. They had to blame a white guy. They need the white supremacist.
Oh, okay. I screwed that one up.
They're claiming that the shooter.
I should have known better.
That the shooter in Dayton was a guy by the name of Connor Betts. Now get ready for this, Charlie. Connor Betts died in 2014.
No way.
Yes way.
That reminds me of Amir Bukhari. Remember him, the 20th hijacker, and they quickly removed his name.
Yeah.
Not only was he dead, he died exactly 1 year to the day before. September 11th, 2000. Yeah.
Yep. And then on top of that, the Dayton shooting, although I haven't gone into much detail yet about the Dayton shooting, there's
a picture. Brian, send me all of this stuff.
I'd be glad to. You could go to my website, Charlie. It's all there in black and white.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't realize that I didn't look into it, the Ohio thing, in much detail. I didn't realize he was even white.
I've only began to tear the Ohio one apart because there's also a picture that was taken after the nightclub shooting in Ohio that shows street litter with a whole bunch of shoes all stacked up into one neat pile. Like, okay, excuse me. Why were patrons to a nightclub after shooting told to take off their shoes and throw them into a neat pile to be photographed in the middle of the street?
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Did you ever see, what the hell is that movie with Dustin Hoffman? Wag the Dog?
Yeah.
And they had the shoe that everybody was throwing their shoes up over the power lines. Remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
It was all propaganda, but it makes me think of that. Oh, my fucking God.
It is. And, you know, Charlie, everything about these two, should be alerting everybody to the fact that they're total and utter bullshit. I mean, they're being set up because what they want to do now is they're gunning for gun control. You know, I know something. I really think that in a lot of ways, and I wrote about this, a lot of the American people are more skeptical now, and a lot of them are actually waking up. Now it's throwing fear into the Jewish elite that controls America. So what they want to do now is the first phase, of course, is to take total control of the internet. You know what the meme about?
Well, you know, Brian, I've been thinking about this, and I'm kind of second guessing on this. I think I agree with the government that we should give up our guns. I think everybody should be armed with a fucking army tank instead, don't you?
What would happen?
I think it's a much better idea. Let's just give up the guns. They're basically useless now anyway. Just get fucking army tanks. How about anti-aircraft missiles?
Yeah, stingers. Yeah, no kidding. But the problem is, though, it's too expensive. Guns are cheap, and by the Second Amendment, everyone has the right to bear arms.
Well, if you can get enough people to lobby Congress, you can get Congress to do anything for you, right? We can just change the laws and, you know.
Heck, if they can send billions of dollars to Israel, why not?
Yeah, that's all that you need in this country is money, you know. Just print it in your fucking basement. That's what they do.
Jeez. But Charlie, the whole fact is, and you and I have discussed it many times, they want to now clamp down and isolate the American people totally before the economy collapses.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they're getting itchy now because they got plans and they can't implement them until they have everybody disarmed.
Yep.
The citizenry, not the criminals.
Of course they do. And right now, this is a perfect propaganda piece because you have that Gilroy false flag up in California last week at that garlic festival. Then all of a sudden now these two in quick succession. Guaranteed, Charlie, they're going to have a few more yet coming over the next little while just to scare the crap out of people.
Hey, the school year is starting up in a few weeks. Oh, they took a vacation this past school year, but now they're going to whip that up again.
Well, let's hope not, because the thing is, like I said, the problem is, though, we have too many gullible people out there that will swallow this bullshit, and that's the problem. You and I both...
Brian, I said it before, I'll say it again. When you have people driven to desperation, that they're willing to go on a shooting spree, I don't advocate that, but if someone's going to go mad on a shooting spree, they're going to go after the pricks that are fucking them. They're not going to target
innocent people. Absolutely. I'm surprised at that because, you know, a real shooting would be in a government office, shooting the damn bastards are responsible for the atrocities committed upon the people. They wouldn't go
That's
after
That's how you know he's a fake right there. Just like 9/11, right? They're not going to target radical, fanatical Muslims. They're going to go after the goddamn fucking White House and the Capitol building and, you know, the UN or something.
Anyway,
Tel Aviv.
That's what I was going to say. They want to protect the Jews.
Right.
Oh, Charlie, it's a false flag world, and it's going to get worse. And you know, and like you said, after a short hiatus, now they're at it again.
But what blows me away, Brian, is this is such freaking, well, what used to be called common sense. It's just bare, you know, simple, factual based reasoning that can see through this like a friggin' piece of glass, you know, transparent glass.
But the problem is
right over the heads of most people.
The problem is though, Charlie, the people have been too dumbed down now by fluoride, poisons in their food, poisonous vaccines, name it. So now they don't have the brain cells to have any kind of critical thinking skills anymore. So now the fools that are they're launching these false flags, they don't give a shit if they are being sloppy about it. They'll just throw it out there because they know the majority of people will swallow it without any thought.
I think they're deliberately sloppy a lot of times because they get off on it more that they can
get
so sloppy.
Yes, they do. They actually laugh, and guarantee behind closed doors, they're laughing themselves silly, saying, look at how stupid the American people are. What a bunch of fucking idiots. They all fall and they'll swallow this bullshit. But that's exactly it. You know, you hit the nail on the head, old buddy. But listen, I don't want to take up much more of your time because I know you want to get on to your subject material. But I just figured I'd give you the 2 cents worth. But like I said, go to my website. Just read. I mean, I've been pounding away at this since the weekend, and I've been pounding like crazy, just drumming up facts and like people sending me more and more material on a continuous basis now. And I've got article after article that come up. I'm just trying to reach people out there to get them to open up their minds and common sense.
Yeah.
And you know what? The problem is, though, like I said, my readership has been declining over the last few years, but now it's gotten to an upswing, and I'm afraid at some point they're going to shut me down. Like, you remember what they
probably
did last year?
They're shutting everything down, Brian. It's so disgusting, man. YouTube is gone. Forget that.
I don't even use it, of course. I'd rather use Brighteon, which is run by Mike Adams over at Natural News. Yeah. At least Brighteon still has a sense of freedom in terms of videos.
Yeah, he's pretty good. I like that guy. Yeah.
But YouTube is destroyed. The Jews have totally destroyed that channel.
Yeah. The few videos on there that are left that say anything of substance, they never come up in a search. Never.
Yeah. Yeah, and they won't. They'll keep censoring them. Anyway, old buddy, like I said, just take a gander at my site. You know where to find me. And take a look and read, because I'll tell you something, you'll shock the hell out of you. I'm getting more, like I said, I've got more material coming up within the next few days, but all I can do is just send it out to people and tell them, here.
Yeah, you mentioned a few whoppers there. I wasn't aware. I'm going to have to go over and check that out.
Listen, you have a good show, buddy, because like I said, get back to your subject matter on hand, and I'll talk to you later, okay?
You bet. Thanks for calling, man.
Sure.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Wow. As always, guys, as always, and I do mean always, upon close inspection, these frickin' stories never, never add up. There's always major, unsurmountable problems that you just cannot get around that force you to conclude, once again, that we've been had once again. Yes, indeed. There's no truth to any of this. Which is why I've always said, and I will still remain saying forevermore, as long as this system is in place, that when you hear something on the news, you know, or you should know by now, that it's bullshit. The very fact that it makes it on the news, the mainstream news, should tell you it's bullshit. I used to argue that, well, you know, about the only thing you can get out of it that's reliable is the weather. Oh, Christ, you can't even go by that anymore. The weather's bullshit, too. One of the reasons is, how can you predict it when it's so freaking orchestrated now? It's so tampered with, you can't predict it anymore because it'll change at the drop of a dime, and it does. So So, you know, some of that isn't the weathermen's fault. This shit happening that they don't even understand. Or maybe they do, and they're just keeping their mouths shut about it. Whatever. But you can't even trust the weather anymore. Anyway. So let's get back to our... actually, let's hopefully finish up. I don't want to ramble too much tonight. I want to finish these notes just because I got so many important things to cover. And, you know, this is like the third show now I'm on this particular topic, so I don't want to stretch it out anymore. I ended off last week on this point, so let me pick up here. It's interesting to point out that initially the Hyksos, during the main Hyksosian occupation, not the Amarna period that we've been talking about, and not the pre-occupation occupation that we're going to be talking about later, which goes back to about 2500 BC, but the main occupation in around the 19th century, somewhere right in there, when the Hyksos initially had occupied Egypt, the one that you always hear about in the mainstream history books, because that's the only one that they acknowledge. When they dominated Egypt, even though later the Hyksos became major advocates, major proponents of Adonai or Aten, originally the chief deity that they pushed was the Egyptian god Set or Set. Set was the evil god who was the brother of Osiris, who actually killed Osiris. And later on, he became synonymized with Satan, the Hebrew Satan, you know, the god of evil. So you could say that the original god of the Hyksos was actually Satan, an evil deity. Doesn't that figure? Anyway, there's some additional interesting points to make note of. Exodus 1:7 says that the Israelites, or Hyksos, while in Egypt, quote, had waxed exceedingly mighty, and the land was filled with them. That's interesting, because that is the picture we're painted about the Hyksos, that they had saturated Egypt. And that's how they were able to overtake it without a fight, as Manetho tells us, right? They had infiltrated, you know, the royal family, of course, seized the throne, but they were also able to overcome the royal family because they were so damn innocent. And they constituted every city area where, you know, the royalty was done. All right, guys, perfect job.
Douglas Rushkoff on why Jews are dangerous.
The thing that makes Judaism dangerous to everybody, to every race, to every nation, to every idea, is that we smash things that aren't true. We don't believe in the boundaries of nation state. We don't believe in the ideas of these individual gods that you know, that protect individual groups of people. These are all artificial constructions, and Judaism really teaches us how to see that. In a sense, our detractors have us right, in that we are a corrosive force. We're breaking down the false gods of all nations and all people because they're not real. And that's very upsetting to people.
baby, you got the love I need. Maybe more than enough.
All right, guys, welcome back. Here's another very interesting point from the Not-So-Holy Book. Exodus 1, verse 10, three verses later, says that when there falleth out any war, in other words, in Egypt, when a war would occur, they, meaning the Hyksosian Israelites, they join unto our enemies, Egypt's enemies, and fight against us. Remember I said how when you know how to read this book between the lines, it actually exposes them for the scum that they are. Well, here's a good example of that. This has been their tactic all through the centuries, everywhere they've gone, isn't it? When they can't get what they want, if they can't buy, coerce, or otherwise bribe political leaders to do their bidding, they will side with the given target nation's enemies, pin them against them, create a war, fund them to take them out that way if they can't overtake them from within. And so here we have it right here in the book of Exodus. When there falleth out any war, well, yeah, the war that they instigated, they, the Hyksos, or the tribesmen, they join also unto our enemies and fight against us. Yeah, there you go. That's very interesting, isn't it? Very telling. Anyway, I've talked about this on previous shows, but let me mention here again. In fact, one listener was mentioning this in an email this week to me. So I figured I would mention this again in this context. Once Moses or Akhenaten realized that he was not going to regain the Egyptian throne and that he was no longer welcome in that country, he clearly decided that he had, you know, to give his tribe a new identity, one that was seemingly separate and distinct from Egypt. He knew now that they had to go back to tribe land and regroup there and try to come up with an alternative plan. We're going to take Egypt down another way. We can't do it from within now. We've been exposed. We've got to create some alliances with other groups that are either pissed off with Egypt already, or if they're not, we got to piss them off against Egypt to ally them with us, and hopefully we can overtake them that way. Or maybe we just got to bide some time. They actually did both. They did ally with other groups to try to take Egypt over, and they bided some time, waited a few generations, and then slipped their foot back in the door in various ways by getting other nations that they worked with to become pharaohs, or to get one of their own. And, I'm going to be talking about that on a future show very soon here. They did get some of their own to sit on the throne in Egypt generations later. But I don't want to let the cat out of the bag on that yet, so I'll save that. But when I talk about that, that's going to amount to a fourth Hyksosian occupation. And their fingerprints all over that. But that wasn't until about 300 BC. So that was much later than this period. Anyway, so Moses realized, okay, I cannot get the throne back. We're not going to be able to go back to Egypt and restore the old glory days. We've got to go it on our own. We've got to go back, to our so-called homeland. And we need to establish our own identity that doesn't identify with Egypt. The only reason why they had their god called Aten instead of Adonai was because, well, first of all, that's what it transliterated into in the Egyptian language. But also, they wanted to make it look like it was the old god Aten that the Egyptians worshipped. It wasn't. It was their god with a little bit of a facelift. They Egyptianized it a little bit, right? So, but Moses realized now that we can't have our god identified with Egypt anymore. We got to make it look unique. And when our holy book is written down later, it's got to be written in such a way that it looks like all of our kings that ruled in Egypt actually ruled in Palestine. You get it? They reinvented the whole story. And isn't it interesting, guys, that when you read the Not So Holy book, it mentions Pharaoh all over the place, right? This Pharaoh, that Pharaoh, the other Pharaoh. It never mentions by name, except like in First Chronicles, it mentions Necho or whatever. But all during the time of Moses, there were several pharaohs, right, that were that spanned that whole story, even into the time of Joshua and you know some of the early Israelite kings. They mentioned various pharaohs, but never by name. Never by name, because they didn't want you to put these stories into their proper context so that you would see that, wait a minute, this particular Hebrew king wasn't, you know, in Palestine. This was not the setting for this story. It was in Egypt. They didn't want you to figure out the little scam that they were running. Anyway, so Moses gave this new religion a facelift. He changed the name Aten or Adonai to the Shasu name Yahweh. Another name that, you know, that was utilized too, of course, was El. Where did they get that from? Or Elohim or El Shaddai. Where did the El come from? That was from the Canaanites. Their chief deity was El. See how they borrowed everything, borrowed and twisted, but borrowed nonetheless. Well, they never borrow, do they? They steal. You know what I'm saying? It's all plagiarism. But with that in mind, now this passage, which I've read before, but let me read it again now in this context. Exodus 6, verse 3. Now we can make sense of what this means. This is Yahweh speaking here. He says, I appeared to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob as God Almighty, i.e. Adonai. But by my name, the Lord, i.e. Yahweh, I did not make myself fully known to them. You see what's going on here. This had to be added in to explain why the name Yahweh or Jehovah was now being used for their God instead of Aten. So now they covered up that they were making, or Moses covered up that he was making a change when in fact he put the burden on his God himself, you see. Well, I didn't change the name. God told me this. You see how this works. But in reality, that's what was going on. The name Aten was changed to Yahweh to give them a new identity, and he depicted Yahweh as the one who changed his name. Get the fuck out of here. What a crock of shit. But now we see how this came about and why, more importantly. This was the official kickoff of the Yahweh cult under Moses Akhenaten. And as I said before, it created a split in Judaism, a split which still remains with us to this day. You have the Yahwists, right, or the adherents to the, you know, the Mosaic law, and then you have the more occult side of Judaism, the adherents to the, you know, the Kabbalah and whatnot. That's where the split originated. There were some that were diehard loyalists to the old Atenist or Adonai cult, which was more occultic in nature. And then the ones that were the adherents to the new Shasu, you know, Hebrewized God, Jehovah or Yahweh, which is not of Egyptian origin, whereas Adonai or Aten was. So that's where it started. You even have that split, as I pointed out before on previous shows, that carried over into Christianity. Many of them don't realize that, but that's exactly what the difference is between Catholicism and Protestantism. Catholicism is an extension of Atenism with their worship of the sun deity, Jesus, with the bright solar rays behind his head or the big yellow halo over his head, and Mary as well, which is really Isis, right? It was just a carryover of the old Egyptian traditions of Atenism. You know, putting the round wafer, which the Egyptians ate in honor of their god Osiris, representing the sun, right? Or Ra, or, you know, whatever. And very often, they put those round wafers in a bronze monstrance that has these rays of light coming out, you know, radiating beams of light, representing the sun. That's pure Atenism, ladies and gentlemen. Whereas Protestantism rejected that version of Christianity, right? They call it sun worship, and it is. It's exactly what it is. Catholicism is fucking Atheist sun worship. And I'm not saying I agree with Protestants. They're full of shit, too. But I'm simply saying this is how this whole thing started. It's a parallel of the division within Judaism between Atheism or Adonai worship and Yahwehism, Yahweh worship. So the Protestants represent, you know, the form of Judaism that separated or that rejected Atheism and accepted the new Mosaic religion of Yahwehism, following the Torah. Jesus was a big Torah follower, right? He rejected the Pharisees. He was an anti-Atheist, even though his roots came from Atheism, something I'll be covering in the not-too-distant future on an upcoming show. Jesus's Egyptian Atheist roots. And I'll argue that he abandoned those roots, not because he was a genuine, sincere, religious person that only believed in Moses' Yahwehism. No. It's only because, you know, the majority of people in Judea at that time were more traditionalist, Mosaic, or I should say Torah-following Jews. So he wanted to reform he wanted the Pharisees overthrown is what he wanted. But he did it under the guise of reforming their corrupt religious practices that weren't in line with the Torah. You see what I'm saying? He used religion as a tool, just like all the other insurrectionists of the first century did. They weren't religious. Well, I shouldn't say none of them were. There were a few that were. They were just fanatic nuts is what they were. But most of them didn't care about religion. It was just a tool, just like most religious leaders today aren't actually religious. Very, very few religious leaders today. And when I say leaders, I'm talking, you know, the only sincere ones among them are local ministers who don't know better. But when you get into higher levels in church administration, that none of them are sincere. I can guarantee you that. None of them. They're all phonies. They would never be allowed a high position if they weren't, just like in government. The higher you go, the more phony they are. It has to be that way. The whole system would crumble. They got to make sure that only the top-notch leaders in any organization today are pieces of sellout shit without a conscience. That's why, you know, Trump supporters out there, obviously, got your head up your ass. You should have realized from the word go, the fact that he got in the White House should have told you he was a piece of shit just because of the nature of the system that we're living under. There's no way they're going to allow anybody with any sincerity, any real desire to change things on behalf of the general population. There's no way, no fucking way, baby, that could happen at this juncture. No way. It was more possible in previous ages where they actually, on occasion, wouldn't have minded somebody that was at least somewhat sincere so that they didn't have to fake sincerity, because fake sincerity very often is very transparent, isn't it? But if someone is genuinely sincere, that sells better. But now the system is so far gone, they don't even want someone who's remotely, even in the parking lot of the ballpark of sincerity in there. They can't take the chance now. Anyway, looks like we're going to call her again. Are you there, caller?
Yeah. This is Tony from Chicago. Just Charles. Not that anybody would have to do this to realize that fake shooting in El Paso is totally full of shit. But to really, you know, pound in their head, just go walk into a Walmart like I did a couple hours ago. I mean, I knew it 3 days ago when I heard Walmart. I said, there's just no way. Just go walk in a Walmart. And I know you don't have to do it. I'm sure anybody that's listening doesn't have to do it. But if you feel like doing it, do it. Because you go in there and just look around for 30 seconds. You go, how could they think they could get away with something like this? Yeah. It's just so insane. And okay. I was in a super center. Like I'm sure that one is. It is just unbelievable. But you know what? I'm going to tell you something, just something I want to get off my chest that I really, you know, you're probably sympathetic about it. I think one of the biggest reasons why this country is so fucked up and especially the white population, are because of these churches.
Oh, you won't get an argument from me on that one.
No, I know you would be sympathetic. I mean, yeah, but you just can't say it to people. Even people like myself that are, you know, hardcore right wing, we see what's going on with the New World Order, with Chabad.
You can't say it to most people because they're like crying babies that just got their little pacifier taken away. They'll throw a tantrum. They'll, you know, throw things at you, bite you, scratch you, pinch you, punch you.
Oh, I mean, you know, like I said, you could. It's getting to the point you actually could criticize the Jews, which, let's face it, are the problem. They're the ones that have this plan.
But they can handle criticism better than Christians can. Yeah.
But, you know, the reason why they're getting away with it is fucked up white people, half of which go to these fucked up churches. Yeah. And the other half watch sports, and then they intertwine. And that's why Texas is all fucked up, and it is. Pastor Haney.
The government loves these things. They'll never abolish religion. Christians think, oh, they're going to persecute. No way. They love that shit. That's the greatest indoctrination center. That's better than what the CIA has produced.
You better believe it. And then you try telling these assholes that. Oh, you can't even say it on any talk radio. I mean, alternative radio, internet radio. Yeah. Oh, man, you can assault these churches. Church ladies, they're real brainers with their big guts hanging out, their asses hanging out, their caked on makeup, their wigs. Oh, yeah. Oh, brainers. Oh, pastor, I'm going to heaven with a bunch of fucking assholes. And they'll believe anything. And that's how these kikes are getting away with what they're getting away with. They're literally taking us down into a worldwide Chabad Lubavitch police state through these church assholes.
You know, one of the best shows I ever did exposing the great prick in the sky called Yahweh was the one a couple of years ago in December. It was Yahweh is Satan. It was on YouTube, right? That son of a bitch has been taken down. And correct me if I'm mistaken. I don't think I even mentioned anything about the Jew factor in there. It was just strictly exposing Yahweh as the devil. That got taken down. And you know why? I guarantee you it's the Christian community probably bitched and moaned so much. And, you know, they comprise so much of the viewership that they probably caved in just because, you know, so you don't even have freedom of speech when it comes to religion if you hit it too hard.
Exactly.
And touch going with them. They'll throw a tantrum and they'll get your freedom of speech suppressed.
Well, I'm gonna tell you, have you ever heard of Pastor Rick Wiles out of Vero Beach?
No.
True News. Okay, look it. For a mainstream.
Oh, I've seen True News. Yeah, that's the guy he has on as a guest.
Dude, he's not a bad dude. I mean, look it. Fine. He's a mainstream Christian. Look, I would assume that you're even against identity Christianity, where I kind of I'm not a believer, but at least I relate to those people politically. But, you know, that's a small group of people. But as a mainstream preacher, he used to be with Trinity Broadcasting Network, and he used to be with CBN. He has just totally turned, man. He's basically calling both those networks Jew-owned frauds. I mean, he says it in so many words.
Oh, yeah, no, there's no question. There are exceptions. I'm not saying all Christians across the board. You got to be balanced. No, I actually have some friends that are Christian who are very Jew-wise.
No, he's good. He's trying to wake people up. He's trying to wake people up on this shit. Yes, you should watch him, man. He's trying to wake people up.
I know who you're talking about now. I didn't recognize the name, but I know who you mean. Yeah. I've seen him. Yeah.
So
I consider him a fellow fighter in the front lines, you know. Yeah, he's a good guy.
Yeah. Anyway, I just wanted to get that off my chest because, man, these church people piss the shit out of me. I mean, in this area, in Chicago, well, you got the same shit in Massachusetts. This Catholic church. I mean, how many fucking pedophiles, communists, and homos has to be revealed out of this place before these assholes stop walking into there and giving them money? There's no end to it. There's no end.
They have a huge
plethora
of excuses that they'll launch at you, you know, to justify. They just can't face reality. They can't.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just an arm of the New World Order. It's just unbelievable. We're fucked, man. I am really getting nervous. This Trump is just a total traitor. total fucking traitor. He's in with Chabad Lubavitch. And I mean, I think the Rothschilds and the whole group of Jews, man, that are, they decide, you know what? We can do exactly what we want to do through this asshole easier. Yeah. Like you were, I think you were saying it easier with the Trump supporters. They'll go with any fucking shit he comes up with. I can't stand the guy now. All right, I'll let you finish your show, man. I'll let you finish your show. Thanks for the call.
Yeah. Oh, yes, folks. These churches are definitely part of this corrupt bitch of a system. You know, I've gone on occasion to, I have no aversion to going, you know, if somebody invites me to go to a church, I'll go. I can use a good laugh, you know. I like to hear the latest bullshit that they're spewing. I wouldn't make a habit of it, but on occasion I've gone here and there. And one time I was in a Catholic church and the sermon, the guy was talking about, you know, contemporary events and how they fit in with the prophecy, which was kind of ironic because usually Catholics don't even talk about stuff like that. Anyway, and I think it was in the course of a prayer he said afterward, he's saying, "Oh, Lord, we ask that you bless our servicemen who are fighting for our freedoms." Right there, that did it. Right there. There's no way that fucking guy believes for 1 minute that our servicemen are legitimately actually fighting for our freedoms. He has to know that's horse shit. But he also knows that he has to say stuff like that because he's required to, as being a 501c3 tax exempt frickin' government sanctioned corporation. Just like the news media, they have to put horse shit like that in there, right? They're required to do the same. So I just hear that and I cringe. I almost want to stand up and say, "You lying son of a bitch. You don't believe that for 1 second. Why are you telling that to these people?" Ah, it's so disgusting, guys. Again, they all lie, right? Whether it's the media, whether it's the government itself, whether it's the education system, the professors, the teachers, the ministers, they're all lying. But when you see it coming from someone who's supposed to be representing God, whatever that's supposed to mean, but you know what I'm saying, the way people interpret the word God, it's supposed to be, you know, the arbiter, the foundation of truth and honesty and decency and, you know, blah, 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 blah. So when you see lies coming from that avenue, to me, it's just more repulsive than any other source. You expect it from the government. You expect it from the media. You expect it from academia, right? Well, I now expect it from religion too, but most people don't. That's the last place, in fact, most people would think lies come from. Oh, Jesus Christ, they invented the word. Fucking religion, man. Anyway, organized Abrahamic religion, particularly. Anyway, let's get back to our notes here. I promised I wasn't going to ramble here. I am rambling. So Moses introduced Yahwehism, gave them a new identity, you know, gave them a facelift to divorce themselves from those Egyptian roots or from their connection with Egypt, right? They wanted to cover all that up. That's why you never see any of the pharaohs' names mentioned in the Old Testament, except for Necho, but that wasn't a historically significant, story that was being relayed at the time. So it didn't matter, so they could mention that one pharaoh. But all the other times that pharaohs are mentioned, when the storyline is important, it's significant, and it would have a strong bearing to fit into a historical time frame, they purposely did not mention the name of the pharaoh. And by the way, I got to mention this too. Most of those stories where a pharaoh is anonymously mentioned, Egyptian kings weren't even called pharaohs back then. The name Pharaoh was not adopted until about 500 fucking BC. Most of those stories go way back before that. Isn't that interesting? So that tells you that the whole thing's full of shit right there, because the stories that are supposed to have been written pre-500 BC could not possibly have been done so when they were using the word Pharaoh that wasn't even in existence yet. Gotta love it. They call that an anachronism. The Old Testament's loaded with that kind of shit. But okay, so not only did Moses invent a new name for the God, right? Change it from Adonai to Yahweh, but he introduced a lot of seemingly unique, it turns out that a lot of those unique things aren't unique. They're just not Egyptian. But they're not unique because all the other laws and statutes and practices and whatever were stolen from other cultures, mostly in the Levant, from the Canaanites and later the Hittites and on. But they were non-Egyptian. So Moses was trying to give them some, give them a new identity that was not Egyptian. Okay, now we got to ask, was Moses really a king? Can we make we've already made the connection between Moses and Akhenaten by looking at Akhenaten's story and seeing that it matches up, with Moses perfectly. But what about the Moses story? Is there anything in the Moses storyline that would indicate that he was, in fact, a king? Well, yes, they didn't sanitize their little fairy tale enough to remove all of these elements. They left enough in there that we can see that, yes, he did actually have royal blood, even according to the Torah. So the Old Testament says that Moses was raised in the Egyptian royal court. It doesn't come out and say outright that he became a king. And this is just what we would expect, right? Since the whole job of the biblical authors was to hide the Jewish royal bloodline coming out of, Hyksosian Egypt. But nevertheless, there is another tribal source, the Talmud, which does admit that Moses became a king. When I said that there were hints in the Torah, yes, we're told that he was raised in a royal court, right? That he was found, in the basket floating down the Nile, and he was raised. So we do have him having royal connections from the time of his, early youth, from the time when he was a baby. And I mentioned too, by the way, let me just mention again, that whole story was lifted right out of, take your pick. Originally, that story was in Akkadia. King Sargon was said to have been floated down the Euphrates, right, as a baby, and then he was raised in the Babylonian royal court. There's also an equivalent to that in ancient Egypt, too. So probably more directly it came from Egypt, or it could have come from the Babylonian mythos, too, because don't forget, the Torah was based on known historical events, of course, the Hyksosian Egyptian occupation. But it was written down at the time of the Babylonian occupation. The Babylonian captivity. By Ezra. All right, guys, quick break, right back.
This is an important message on behalf of the WHO, the World Health Organization. It has come to our attention that various neo-Nazi groups are trying to promote natural, healthy, alternative products to white people. The Rockefeller Foundation didn't spend billions of dollars in creating the synthetic and safe medical and pharmaceutical industries, so some far-right startup like heathenherbs.com, to name but one, can now destroy over 100 years of testing on humans and other animals. Your painful death today helps us treat black, brown, and yellow children tomorrow. Thank you.
Renegade Broadcasting, hard-hitting talk radio.
Guys, welcome back. So the Talmud does say that Moses became a king, but it doesn't say, of course, that he was ever king of Egypt. They're not going to admit that. But interestingly, it says that he was king of Ethiopia or Nubia. And you know what? That actually might be possible. After he finally was kicked out of Egypt, told to pack his bags, he may in fact have gone down there. Don't forget, the Not-So-Holy Book tells us that our little tribal friends always were siding with Egypt's enemies, right? There were times, as I pointed out on previous shows, where they would hire Nubians as mercenary troops, you know, to fight the Egyptians on their behalf. Of course, the Egyptians also hired Nubians on occasion, too. But you understand my point? That would have made a lot of sense for Moses to have done that, hoping that he could, you know, rally the Nubian army. They were very proficient in fighting. If he could turn that whole army against Egypt, I think he had the hopes of overtaking Egypt that way. Anyway, it says that he was later forced into a situation where he had to abdicate the throne there, just as Akhenaten had done in Egypt. So isn't that a kick in the ass? So apparently his plans went belly up. He did intend to use the Nubians to fight Egypt, and when they got wise to that, they forced him to abdicate the throne. Very interesting admission on the part of the Talmud, wouldn't you say? That's all the more reason to believe that this probably is a true story. Anyway, after all, you know, it's not glorifying him. Yes, he became a mighty king there and, was able to exploit. That's usually what they would say. No, they said he was forced to abdicate. Anyway, Talmud also says that after 9 years of ruling in Nubia, the Nubian queen, Adonith, which transliterates into Aten-it in Egyptian. Adonith is Aten-it. So there's a form of Aten. So he brought his Atenism down there. And, you know, that's not a surprise because we know that the Nubians did pick up a lot of, stuff from the Egyptians. Anyway, in this case, Hyksos. According to this Talmudic story, she wanted her own son to be king instead of Moses. And so she said to the people, "Why should this stranger continue to rule over you?" Well, ultimately, that's just what the Egyptians said, too, about our little Hyksosian friends, and kicked their asses out. So, according to this Talmudic story, that's the same thing that went on in Nubia. This guy's a foreigner. Who the hell is, you know, why are we listening to this guy? Throw him out. So, we're told that Moses was forced to resign, to abdicate. This is interesting because the Old Testament does say that Moses married, quote, an Ethiopian, which back then meant Nubian, and her name was Zipporah. So there you go. at that time, Ethiopian was just a broad name that covered a much bigger territory than what we call today Ethiopia. You know, it entailed all the way out into the Sudan, you know. So, yeah. So the biblical account does match up with the Talmudic account. He probably was, for a time, down there serving as king, and while he was there, married a Nubian. Very interesting. From this, we might conclude that Akhenaten, after abdicating the throne, might have wound up at some point, you know, after leaving Sinai, maybe he met up with some Nubians there, because there were there was a mixed multitude. Remember that in the book of Exodus, we're told that a mixed multitude went with Moses out into the Sinai en route to, quote, the promised land. So we could imagine that there were some Nubians among them, right? So he probably got to talking to them, and then he got the idea, hey, Jesus, well, why don't I go down there and see if I can weasel my way in? I'm sure he had some connections when he was Pharaoh, right? He probably employed some Nubians as mercenaries, right? So he went down there to try to reestablish those connections, got his foot in the door for a time on the throne, and then ultimately they caught on to him, just like the Egyptians caught on to him and kicked his ass out. This makes total sense historically. I see no reason to doubt the veracity of this particular Talmudic account. Anyway, let's see. Oh, I have a little note here. Yes, he did, actually. As Akhenaten, he did have a great many Nubians employed as mercenaries in his army. So, yeah, that's not just speculation. He actually did. We know that from the Egyptian historical record. So there you go. Anyway, let's look at even more parallels between Moses and Akhenaten, as if we haven't already seen enough. But I threw some others in here just to add more weight to the argument. There is a fascinating correlation between some of the names of Levite priests in the Not-So-Holy Book and some Egyptian figures from Akhenaten's administration. For example, we have Merire, who was a high priest of Aten in Amarna. This name is the Hebrew equivalent of the name Merari, who is described in Genesis 46:11 as one of the sons of Levi. Now, some might say, well, wait a minute, that was way before the time of Moses. Oh, please, 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 please. The biblical chronology is bullshit. So we can pick any name out of the entire Torah and stick it anywhere we so damn please, because those stories are, even though some of them are based on elements of truth, certainly the chronologies are not correct, and very often the settings are not correct either, are they? We have that with the New Testament as well. In you know, they kept that tradition up. They took stories that had some basis in truth and embellished them with all kinds of horse shit. Very often a hodgepodge of several different personages were combined into one. We have that with the Jesus character. The Jesus character is made up of several people, right? You know, Judas of Gamala, Judas Crestus. So similar is the story of Judas Crestus with that of Jesus that you have to wonder if that really was the real Jesus. Most likely. I'm convinced of that. His followers were called Christians instead of Christians. Isn't that interesting? He was said to have been executed or crucified by Pontius Pilate. Anyway, let's look at some other names here. The name Panahesi, who was the chief servitor of Aten at Amarna, is the Hebrew equivalent of Pinehas, who was the son of Eleazar and grandson of Aaron, you know, the brother of Moses, as we find in Exodus 6:25, in whose family the priesthood was to remain. So So look at these correlations with names here. It's also important to point out that across the river from Amarna, or the city of Akhenaten, on the west bank of the Nile, we find the modern city of Malawi. Since the Egyptian W becomes a V in Hebrew, this name becomes Mal-Levi, which literally means the city of Levi or Levi. Isn't that interesting? Both Moses and Akhenaten not only had gods with the same name, right? Adonai, Aten, or Atenai, the same thing. But their doctrine of a single universal God that was not represented by any image were also held in common. Akhenaten initially had Aten represented in a human form, but later he abolished that, banished it, forbade it, and would not allow Aten to be represented in any anthropomorphic form except in the form of the solar disk emitting rays. But other than that, no representation was to be made. No image, three-dimensional image, was made to be worshipped. He forbade the worship of images, right? As did Moses. Like we see, for example, in Deuteronomy 6:4, which says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord Adonai, the Lord our God, is one," just like Akhenaten said. In fact, Akhenaten wrote these words, "The living Aten is none other than he who himself gave birth to himself, he who decrees life, the Lord of sunbeams." So there you go. It's the same idea. One God. He created his own self, whereas, you know, Yahweh is said to have been be the self-existent one, you know, without beginning. Genesis 1:1 says, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." And here, Akhenaten is calling Adonai, or Aten, he who decrees life, the Lord of sunbeams. So the author of everything, right? Just like great Yah is supposed to be. Akhenaten concurrently wrote, in harmony with Genesis 1:1, "The world came forth from thy," or Aten's, "hand, thou creator of mouths and maker of days." Oh, I'm sorry, creator of months. I wrote that wrong. Did I do that? Creator of months, maker of days, and reckoner of hours. Now, that's interesting because in the book of Daniel, some of you might recall, if you were ever a Bible dupe like I was, Yahweh is called the God of times and seasons, right? So that is a direct echoing of what we just read here, where Aten or Atenai or Adonai is the creator of months and the maker of days and the reckoner of hours. The same idea. The Lord of time, in other words. And isn't that what was said of the god Saturn, the Lord of time? Always what we get with Yahweh is just echoings, stealings from other religious ideas and concepts. Anyway, Exodus 15:18 states, "The Lord shall reign forever and ever." So there's the idea of the God of time. You know, Jesus is said to be the same yesterday, today, and forever, right? Timeless. And so this idea ultimately originated with Aten. Here's another quote from Akhenaten. "Thou," meaning Aten or Adonai, "thou hast created the earth when thou wert afar, namely men, cattle, all flocks, and everything on earth which moves with legs or which is up above flying with wings." This sounds like something out of the Not-So-Holy Book, guys. "The foreign countries of Syria and Cush and the land of Egypt." In other words, he created everything, right? This is what is said of Adonai or Yahweh. "Everyone who has food and his lifetime is reckoned, and similarly their languages are wholly separate in form." Aren't we told that Yahweh created the division of languages at the Tower of Babel? It's the same shit, guys. But do understand, they weren't plagiarizing Egyptian writings here, because the writings I'm reading from here weren't Egyptian, were they? He happened to have been a king of Egypt, but he wasn't Egyptian. We're reading from a Hyksosian king. The quote ends off by saying, "For their colors are different, for thou hast made foreign peoples different." And when did that come about? Also, we're told the Tower of Babel. Not only were the languages created, but, you know, God created a division of different races, we're told. You know, whatever. Blah, 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 blah. But all of this was attributed by Akhenaten to Adonai. Aten's name was often represented in a royal cartouche, indicating that he was considered a divine king. Likewise, of course, Adonai was referred to as a king. For example, in Isaiah 11:21, we read, "Produce your cause, says the Lord. Bring forth our strong reasons, says the King of Jacob." So there you go. Yahweh or Adonai was also considered a king. This idea originated with Moses or Akhenaten as and his god, Aten. Anyway, we got another passage here, Isaiah 44:6. I don't have to read all of these. There's another one, Isaiah 52:7, all referring to the great Yah as a god who reigns, king of Zion, blah, blah, blah. From inscriptions at the Karnak Temple and the rock tombs of Amarna, or the city of Akhenaten, we can see that Akhenaten felt the same way about his god as Moses did about his. Same god. Here are some inscriptions from Karnak that Akhenaten himself had inscribed, or had one of his workers inscribed. "The living Aten, there is none other than he, who himself gave birth to himself." Oh, guys, I could spend the rest of the show just elaborating on that from a biblical perspective, but really quick, I just got to throw this in there. Jesus is referred to as the first begotten of God, right? Christians, of course, brush right over that, and they think that that means when Jesus was born in Mary's womb. No, 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 that's not what it's referring to. Not at all. It's referring to Jesus having been born from God long before the time that he was allegedly born in Bethlehem, up in heaven. This is a long story. I think I covered this a while back here on Renegade. But anyway, the Bible actually teaches that, well, for example, the famous John 3:16 passage, right? "God so loved the world that he gave his," what? "His only begotten son." It doesn't say that Jesus became God's only begotten son. No, it says he gave his only begotten son, which would mean that he was already his only begotten son before he even came here, right? There's other passages that say that too. God sent his only begotten son into the world. Obviously, what the Bible is implying is that Jesus was born out of this androgynous tranny god called Yahweh. Remember I did a show on Yahweh the tranny? Well, there you go. There's more evidence of that right there. Just the fact that Jesus is said to have been begotten of God. Anyway, that's a little diversion away from our topic, but I had to mention that because here we have Akhenaten saying that Aten was born of himself, who himself gave birth to himself. That's the teaching of Jesus, that, you know, most Christians claim Jesus is God. He's fucking not God. The Bible never says it, but it doesn't matter. He's the Son of God, is what the Bible actually teaches. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Christians believe that Jesus is God from God. So they literally believe that God gave birth to himself when Jesus was born into this world. It's so fucked up. It's so ridiculous. Here's one to throw at your Trinitarian dumbass friends. Ask them if they believe that God or Yahweh is supposed to be Jesus' Dada, right? And of course, they'll say yes. Okay, well then why does the Bible say that Jesus was begotten of the Holy Ghost? Bingo! Ooh, we got a problem there, don't we? Because if the Holy Ghost is supposed to be a person separate from Yahweh and Jesus, then he would have to be Jesus's daddy now, wouldn't he? Not Daddy Yahya. Oh, what a fucked up religion, isn't it? You can expose it for the bullshit that it is on so many levels and so many fucking ways. You can't even count them all. As I speak, I'm adding another section to my book, you know, exposing the Bible. I got like 100 pages more that I've added. And before I get it to the publisher again, it'll probably be at least another 50. I don't know. I'm still constantly finding major fucking contradictions that I haven't even noticed before. There's no end to them. I don't think I'll ever have a book that I can say is complete. It's just not possible. Because there's always something you never looked at from a particular angle before. Oh, shit, I didn't think of it that way, you know? But I'm going to try as hard as I can to get it as close to complete as I can. Anyway. Here's another quote from Akhenaten, referring to Aten. He who decrees life, the Lord of sunbeams, the world came forth from thy hand. These sound like things right out of the Torah, right? Of course. Because it's talking about the same God. Here's another one. Thou createst the earth when thou wert afar, namely man, cattle, all flocks, and everything on earth, which moves with legs, blah, blah, blah. So here we go, guys. This sounds exactly like what we find in the Torah written about Adonai, because as it turns out, it is talking about the same God, and that they were written by the same person. Moses Akhenaten. No wonder they use similar language. Just like before when I talked about Amenhotep III, right, who was Solomon. You go over to the Proverbs, and bingo! Quite a few of the Proverbs match up with stuff attributed to Amenhotep III because they were the same goddamn person. Remember the 30 admonitions of Amenhotep? And then Solomon says, seeing that you have these 30 admonitions before you, how will you conduct yourself? Oh, my God. Anyway. Moving on here. It's important to point out that the patriarchs who preceded Moses worshipped their God by building an altar of stone at the spot where the deity had allegedly spoken to them. For example, we read this in Genesis 12, verse 7, Genesis 33, verse 20, on and on. It was only when Moses came along that the idea of a temple was introduced into the Hebrew form of worship, which began as, you know, the movable wilderness tabernacle. But prior to that time, there weren't temples dedicated to the deity as places where the people would congregate and meet for worship and whatnot. Prior to that time, there were these sacred stone altars that were built. So again, we can see an innovation from, quote, Moses Akhenaten, which came right out of Egypt. Likewise, there was no continually functioning priesthood among the tribe prior to the time of Moses. So Moses introduced this perpetual functioning priesthood, always working in the tabernacle or the sanctuary or ultimately the temple, you know, atoning for sin, offering sacrifice. There were priests, but they weren't perpetually performing priests. And multiple priests, you know, working in that capacity. That all came with Moses. And where did that come from? Again, ultimately from Egypt. The Egyptians had this perpetually functioning priesthood working in the temple, right? Moses introduced that as a carryover from Egypt. Moses also introduced the concept of the Ark of the Covenant. Where did that come from? Well, once again, guys, Egyptians had their equivalent of that, or I should say the Hebrews developed their equivalent of what the Egyptians had before them. You know, they had arks made of wood that usually had an anthropomorphic figure on top, sometimes two anthropomorphic figures with wings, usually falcon's wings. Whereas the Hebrew ones had, you know, angels with wings, but the same idea, right? And they had poles that were inserted into rings, metal rings, so, you know, so these things could be carried for religious processions, the same with the Ark of the Covenant, on and on it goes. No wonder Acts 7, verse 22 says that Moses, quote, was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians. Of course he was. He stole everything he learned from them, modified it, and incorporated it into the tribe's religion later on. He had to modify it greatly later, like I said, by introducing a new name for the god. It was still the same prick deity it ever was, but, you know, a new name, so it sounded more Hebraic. Introduced a few other things that he stole from other surrounding tribes, but the bulk of it still ultimately originated from Egypt. We talked a while back, I think it was last week, about the Hebrews worshiping the golden calf and how this was most likely a spillover from Egypt, you know, where the Apis bull was worshipped, right? Well, it turns out that there's a lot more bull going on in the Moses story, a lot more bull god imagery surrounding Moses and the Hebrew religion in general that we need to address here. But first, let's look more closely at bull imagery in ancient Egypt. In addition to the Apis bull, the Egyptians also worshipped Mnevis, spelled M-N-E-V-I-S, silent M, who was anthropomorphic, you know, with a human body and a bull's head. Break coming in. All right, guys, I'm going to try to finish these notes in the last half hour. Do my best.
Hey, mama said the way all right, move, right back. Gonna make you sweat, gonna make you groove.
Care products? Do you even know what those chemicals are? You should. Everything you put onto your body ends up getting into your body, so you better be sure that you are using quality products every day. We know it's often hard to find really good natural products, and when you do find them, they're often very expensive. That's why we have Heathen Herbs. Give us a try. We have affordable herbal tinctures, tooth powder, deodorant, muscle salves, creams, beeswax, cling wrap, gift baskets, magnesium, iodine, throat spray, face spray, hairspray, cleaning spray, bug spray, linen spray, and so much more. We're coming out with new products all the time so that you can replace all the corporate crap. Use coupon code RENEGADE for 10% off everything at heathenherbs.com.
Traveling down the road.
right, guys, welcome back. So this Menevis deity, the bull deity, was often depicted in Egyptian art with a solar disk between its horns. Did you ever see Egyptian art like that? These two pointy things sticking up on top of the head, and then this round circle in the middle. Did you ever wonder, what the hell is that supposed to be? Well, there you go. That's what it is. It's the bull deity with the two horns sticking straight up, and then the solar disk of Ra, or, of course, in our current context, Aten, the solar disk in between the two horns. Anyway, with this in mind, let's now take a very interesting look at a passage from the Torah, which says, "And the children of Israel saw the face of Moses, that the skin of Moses' face shone, and Moses put the veil upon his face again." The Hebrew word for shown here is karan, which can be translated either as to send out rays, or to display or grow horns, or be horned. I guess Moses was a pretty horny guy. The Vulgate Bible uses the latter translation and says his face had horns. Now, you know, that's very interesting, because if you look at some of medieval artwork, Michelangelo's Moses, for example, he's depicted with a horn on his forehead, right? People have often wondered, where the hell did that idea come from? It came from the Torah. This verse implies that Moses had horns. Now, what does that mean? Was he some type of, half human, half bovine creature? No, Moses was wearing his traditional Egyptian priest headpiece, the headpiece of Nevis, the Egyptian bull god. The Hebrew word for skin in this Exodus passage we just looked at is owr, O-W-R, which can mean a man's skin or an animal's skin. So he was wearing an animal skin, a cowhide's mask with horns on it, the mask of Nevis, serving in the capacity of a Nevis priest, but yet using the name Yahweh. Initially Aten, Adonai, but now Yahweh. So he still carried over some of these Egyptian beliefs and practices, didn't he? Moses obviously was wearing, once again, a bullhide face mask with horns, which must surely have been what was elsewhere referred to as a veil that Moses wore over his face. And, you know, we're supposed to believe that he wore this veil because his face was glowing bright because he was in the presence of God. And so he had the brightness of God's glory shining. Oh, shut up. Whatever. He was wearing this veil because it was, in fact, the Nevis mask. Exodus 34, verses 33 to 35 says, "When Moses finished speaking to them," the Israelites, "he put a veil over his face, but whenever he entered the Lord's presence to speak with him, he removed the veil until he came out." So here it is. It was a mask he was wearing, guys. "And when he came out and told the Israelites what he had been commanded, they saw his face was radiant." Yeah, sure it was. "Then Moses would put the veil back over his face until he went to speak with the Lord." In other words, they're trying to justify why he wore this veil all the time. "Oh, I got to do this to cover my face." No. He probably was wearing it, or he was probably saying that as an excuse for some of the ones that, you know, were now accepting the new Yahweh cult and were rejecting the Atenist cult, right? Why do you have these bull horns and this cowhide? "Oh, no, I'm just wearing it to cover my glory, you see. Because when I go to speak with my God, He makes my face glow bright, and I don't want to blind you when you look at me. You see how fucking ridiculous this shit is? He was just making up an excuse to hide the fact that he still was practicing the Atenist religion and the Nevis bull cult ritual. Anyway. Notice how the Apostle Paul gave an entirely different reason why Moses wore this veil. We find this in 2 Corinthians 3:13. Paul says, "We are not like Moses, who would put a veil over his face to prevent the Israelites from seeing the end of what was passing away." So now, according to Paul, he wasn't wearing the mask to cover the brightness of God's glory. Now he was wearing it to prevent the Israelites from seeing the end of what was passing away. Whatever, man. Whatever the hell that's supposed to mean. But it doesn't matter. It's Paul is offering a completely different excuse for the wearing of that mask than what was offered in the Torah. Another contradiction you can add to the ever-growing list. In fact, I don't even think I added that. I might put that in my book. Anyway. Yeah, okay. Let's see. I'm just trying to skip ahead here. I don't want some of this stuff is just side notes that aren't of great significance. So I can get through this by the end of the show here. Oh, yeah, I got to point this out. This tradition obviously carried on with later cultures. You know, you've got the Vikings that wore horned masks. The Celts did the same thing. They might have been elks or moose or whatever instead of bulls, but it's the same basic idea. You know, one culture would pick up religious traits of another as time went on. But my point is, you know, Moses did the same thing, guys. He was wearing a horned bull mask, and that's where we get the idea of Moses having a horn or horns or whatever. I think we got another caller on the line. Are you there, caller?
Hey, Charlie, it's George from Tampa.
Oh, hey, you want to email back and forth with, right?
That's right. That's
almost
me
on a daily basis. Yeah, what's happening?
I just wanted to call in. Yeah, I know it's been a while, but yeah, I'm still in Tampa, and you know, I'm still looking into some of this stuff. But you know, it's a solo thing for me, right?
Yeah, right.
But I just wanted to mention the whole bull thing. I noticed that when you brought that up, because I was looking into that today, and the bull is kind of like related.
The bull's story.
But the bull is like related to Taurus, and you know, I study astrology, and yeah. Taurus is related to money. It's whatever you find valuable in life, and you know, for most people, that's money, right? And then when I started looking at some of the Mithraism that they used to do, you know, that whole picture where he's slaying the bull, and then that scorpion comes and takes his balls.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's that whole thing about equating money with sexuality, which is why what they do to women now. And the woman is the cow.
Yeah.
Right? You know, and so you have Apis the bull, and then later they turn that into Osiris, right? And then that became Christos and Jesus later, and then that became Jesus. And now when people see Jesus, they think it's money.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Yeah, you see what I mean? How they took that Taurus bull and they turned it
right
into
over.
Jesus.
Sure.
Right.
And money's their god, isn't it?
Is their only god.
Yeah.
Yep. I just wanted to call in. I know you're trying to finish these notes, so I just wanted to chime in on that one, though.
Sure, man. Yeah, thanks. Very good.
You bet. Take care, man.
Yeah, take care, man. Oh, it's their god, all right. And you know what's so sad, guys, is they've convinced so many dumbass goy that it's their god, too. They've made it their god. People live for money. People base what they call success around money. People judge others according to money. You're a someone if you have it and a nobody if you don't. It's so fucking disgusting, isn't it? That comes right from them. They're the ones that instilled this in so many people. Money is a joke, guys. It is not a means, especially now, it's not a means of exchange. It's a means of control, exploitation, and degradation of the human spirit. That's all it does, and that's what it's intended to do. They've used it as a tool to destroy people's humanity, and it's unfortunately worked with most people today. That's all people give a damn about. That's all they care about. What's in it for me, money-wise, you know, and it's a waste of time if I'm not making money, and, the whole idea of service, helping others, that's gone, unless I can get something out of it. Fucking pathetic. And now, you know, with the cost of living through the roof, now they got people running like a chicken with its fucking head cut off to try to get ahead, climb the next step of the ladder. Like that's the only thing that matters. People spend their whole fucking life now going to school, paying off those student loans, getting that job they dreamed of. And what does it do for them? When it's all said and done and they look back at their life, most people are disgusted. All they did is pursue worthless pieces of fucking paper, and it made them miserable bitches and bastards in the process. Anyway, enough of that. But that just makes me sick. Anyway, Numbers 24, verse 8 says, God brought them out of Egypt, for then he was as strong as a wild ox or bull, right? Notice how they carry over that bull connotation. I did a whole show on this once, Yahweh the bull god, right? They never could quite divorce themselves from it. Yahweh has bull imagery used with him in quite a few places. In fact, I got several of the verses here I cited. I'm not going to get into that now because I've already covered it before. But where do you think the idea of Baphomet ultimately originated, guys? Now, of course, Baphomet is a goat, right? A goat creature with double horns. And you could argue that it came from Pan, right? Pan was a goat-headed god that the Greeks worshipped. But where did Pan come from? Where did they get the idea from, ultimately? This, you know, anthropomorphic figure, be it a goat head or a bull head having two horns, doesn't matter. Ultimately, guys, it came from Egypt. And Atenism. Came from Moses. Moses, the horned priest. Lucifer is said to have two horns, right? In Babylon, there's the god Sin, who is a bull-headed gorn. A bull-headed horned god. Hathor is another Egyptian figure with horns. Moloch is the Canaanite version. He was also a bull-horned deity. Jupiter has been depicted in some ancient Roman art as having bull horns. Anyway, on and on it goes. Even ancient India, the Hindus, had a god called Pashupati, which was a horned deity. On and on. Let's see. Yeah, I'm going to skip a lot of this. I have quite a few passages I cite here regarding Yahweh and great, you know, he's like the great bulls of Bashan, a great horned bull, you know, that imagery is applied to him over and over and over again. So no wonder that Moses, nod, nod, wink, wink, had a horned bullhorn mask that he wore. Let's quickly look at the brother of Moses as compared to the brother of Akhenaten. We're told of Akhenaten having only one brother, Prince Thutmose, not to be confused with Thutmose III, but Moses' brother was named Thutmose. Most Egyptologists believe that he died just prior to Akhenaten becoming king, because he was never mentioned again once Akhenaten was on the throne. For all we know, Akhenaten might have killed him, so he would be the guaranteed inheritor of the throne. But it would make sense that his brother was named Thutmose because their father was Thutmose the Third. In fact, Akhenaten's name was Thutmose, Thutmose the Fourth. They both were named Thutmose, you know, after their father, but you know, Thutmose the Third, maybe one was supposed to be Thutmose the Fifth or whatever. But Moses changed his name from Thutmose the Fourth very shortly after becoming king to Akhenaten after introducing his Aten or Adonai God. Anyway, there's actually no evidence, though, that he died. It's just assumed that Akhenaten's brother died. Since Prince Thutmose disappeared when Akhenaten became king, again, we might assume that if he wasn't killed, that maybe he was sent to oversee political matters on the king's behalf among their tribal brethren in the Levant, if there wasn't a rivalry for the throne. You know, maybe he just sent him to look after matters there. Who knows? Anyway, later, after going into exile, it's quite possible that Prince Thutmose met his brother in Sinai, now under the name of Aaron, you know, to help Moses or Akhenaten manage affairs there. So it's just interesting that we only have one brother mentioned of Moses, Aaron, one brother of Akhenaten, Thutmose. We're told in Exodus 4:10 of Moses complaining to Yahweh that he was, quote, slow of speech, and how Yahweh told him not to worry, because Aaron will speak to the people for you. In other words, Moses, or Akhenaten, having been raised in Egypt, didn't know Hebrew. He needed someone else to speak on his behalf before the people. Aaron, who apparently was, you know, had spent more time with the tribe, right, was probably in Goshen, which was the tribal settlement of Egypt. So probably learned Hebrew from the time he was very young, whereas Moses didn't because he was raised in the royal court, right? And so you see my point. It would make sense why he would need somebody to speak to the people for him. All he knew was Egyptian. Anyway. We're told that Aaron's primary job was that of high priest, right? And guess what the main job of Prince Thutmose was? He had served as the high priest of Ptah in Memphis. Look at the parallels there. Holy shit, there's no end to them. This point was revealed in an inscription found inside the sarcophagus of his pet cat, which states, quote, Crown Prince, Overseer of the Priests of Upper and Lower Egypt, High Priest of Ptah in Memphis, and Sim Priest of Ptah. So there you go. Akhenaten's brother was a high priest, just like Moses' brother. Unreal. So Mr. Thutmose here, Prince Thutmose, and Aaron were one and the same, just like Moses and Akhenaten were one and the same. Let's see, how much time do we got here? I went off on a tangent. I'll just summarize this section. I'm not going to read it word for word. But it's interesting that we have a focus during the reign of Akhenaten on what's called the Benben Stone. The Benben Stone is basically a capstone of a pyramid. It's a pyramidal-shaped stone. So the capstone on an actual pyramid was called the Benben. There were other Benben stones that were considered sacred. They were usually put at sacred sites or in, you know, in or around a sacred temple. And the Benben stone was, or a Benben stone, was also placed at the apex or the very peak of Egyptian what do you call them? Obelisks, right? A true obelisk is four-sided, And at the very top, you have this pyramidal capstone. That's the Benben stone. It was considered sacred. Akhenaten was the first one to introduce the use of the Benben stone on top of an obelisk, which, you know, in Freemasonry represents a phallic symbol, right? So the big dick Akhenaten was the first one to introduce this phallic stone having the Benben. First, it was a rounded capstone, but then later he introduced this pointed pyramidal shape thing. But it's just interesting because there is a lot of correlation, as I've mentioned on previous shows, between, you know, for example, the Great Pyramid and our little tribal friends. The King's Chamber has the same dimensions as the Holy of Holies in, you know, because the dimensions are mentioned in the Old Testament, and they do correspond with the King's Chamber of the Great Pyramid. Not only that, but I mentioned this before too, the inside of the sarcophagus in the King's Chamber of the Great Pyramid, the dimensions of that match up perfectly with the named dimensions in the Torah of the Ark of the Covenant. So I just found that to be another interesting correlation. There's so many correlations with ancient Egypt and our little tribal friends. It's unbelievable. And why are these correlations there? Because once again, they were the Hyksos that hijacked Egypt. And when they left, they took a lot of these ideas with them, incorporated them into their own religion. And many dumbass Bible dupes think that these things are unique to the Bible, that Yahweh introduced them. Bullshit. They stole them and perverted and corrupted them in the process, as they always do. Anyway, it's important to understand that from the time of Akhenaten onward, there was never, ever a state of Israel, ever. All that Israel ever was a vassal state under the rule of whatever empire was in control of the region at the time. So this whole idea, again, of a king reigning there and having an empire and receiving tribute from vassal states, complete fucking horseshit. You know, I dare any Bible believers out there to take me up on that. Your Bible's full of shit, okay? Those stories never happened the way that they're told. The State of Israel never existed, which is why you have that book, The Creation of the State of Israel, written by a Jew who argues that very point. Here's a Jew arguing, I think it's that guy Shlomo Sand or whatever, if I'm not mistaken. I actually have the book. I haven't even read it yet, but I am planning on reading it. I might even do a show on it because I imagine there's going to be some very interesting stuff on there. Because as I've said before, guys, the best way to expose the tribe very often is to read books written by tribe members, whether or not they're pro or anti tribe. And it's very rare to find one who's anti, but even the pro tribe members very often unwittingly wind up exposing themselves because they, you know, they're addressing a Jewish audience. They don't expect that too many goy are going to be reading their books. But anyway, I don't really know where that guy stands, but he has written some interesting books. Another one is called The Invention of the Jewish People. That's very interesting. But he argues in the book, and rightly so, the archaeological evidence totally backs it up, that there never was a state, quote, of Israel, ever. Where they were independently sovereign. Never, never. They were under the control of Babylon. Well, first Egypt, right? Even though they were Hyksosian kings ruling, they still weren't independent. Then later it was the Babylonians. Then it was the Persians. Then it was, you know, the Macedonians or the Greeks and the Romans. And then after that, of course, there wasn't a state until 1948, but they were never a sovereign state. The only time they have ever been a sovereign state was from 1948 on. An illegitimate one with stolen land, but nevertheless, an independent, well, how can you call it independent when it's totally dependent on us sucking off of us? But you know what I'm saying. Anyway, but it was never independent. Ever. Ever. Any kings that they actually had reigning there were local tribal chieftains who were vassals to a sovereign lord in a foreign land paying tribute. And you have many instances, even the Old Testament will tell you that, where there were uprisings and tax protests, right? Because they weren't sovereign. They were vassals. Always. Oh, that book is so full of shit, man. Anyway. So obviously our little Hyksosian friends were not happy about losing their control in Egypt. Thus, they gave this, quote, prophecy about what they intended to do to Egypt, which, of course, never came to fruition. But listen to the rage they had against Egypt because they got their asses kicked out. Isaiah 19, 1-3 says, "See, the Lord rides on a swift cloud and coming to Egypt, the idols of Egypt tremble before him and the hearts of the Egyptians melt with fear." You see what they were doing here? They wanted vengeance and they intended to carry it out. They figured this prophecy was going to come to fruition eventually, that they were going to find someone that was going to go in and overcome it. They made many attempts, and I'll be talking about some of those on later shows. Many attempts were made, but they never fully succeeded the way this passage describes. Now it quotes Yahweh as saying, "I will stir up Egyptian against Egyptian. Brother will fight against brother. Neighbor against neighbor, city against city, kingdom against kingdom, all within Egypt." This is Yahweh talking now. Any Bible dupes out there listening, this is your loving God talking, how he was going to turn Egyptians against each other and create a massive civil war. Isn't that nice? "The Egyptians will lose heart," Yahweh goes on to say, "and I will bring their plans to nothing. They will consult idols and spirits of the dead, the mediums and the spiritists." But in other words, it'll do them no good. You know, they'll consult their priests and spiritists, but there will be no help because I will thoroughly destroy them from within. This prophecy is written, like I said, because they got to it. Alright guys, that's us for the week. This show, you know, we'll finish it. Off onto some very, very interesting follow-up. Alright guys.
Won't you come see about me? I'll be alone, dancing, you know it, baby. Tell me your troubles and doubts, giving me everything inside and out. And love strange, surreal and dark. Think of the tender things that we were working on. Slow change may pull us apart.
Fallen on hard times, need cash, sick of waiting tables? Here at the Juilliard School of Drama, we can make all your hopes and dreams come true. Sign up for our 33-week course and we will teach you how to laugh mid-sentence when describing how your friend was blown into 6 million pieces, how to move too soon before any shots or explosions are even heard, the lost art of driving into people but having your truck stay nice and clean, the correct posture when crouching over a dummy so your ID card doesn't cause neck strain. Sign up today and we guarantee weekly acting jobs with the CIA, FEMA, MI5, even Mossad! Scholarships and bursaries available for war veteran amputees and illegal immigrants. Juilliard School of Drama. We even supply the tomato sauce and dead chickens.